This week on RSBNB Update, tradition returns with the Intranographical Update, more saturation, a live stream, patch notes, JMod posts on Reddit, double XP, and a behind-the-scenes post. We also learn that the Black Party Hat is on the way, and it'll be earned in-game. Just what's going on here today? This is RSBNB Update, episode 960, recorded Thursday, November 9th, 2023. Modernizing tradition. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. For folks tuning in, you're going to experience this week what is a very traditional RSBNB Update. Isn't that true, Tanis? With just the myriad of news we have this week. It hasn't been this way in a long time.
Well, and it happened quite unexpectedly, kind of, you know, at the end. But we did end up with a four-course meal when I thought we might be coming in with some chicken wings, maybe some pizza rolls, you know. But we got a whole meal this week.
Yeah. Yeah, Parnassus is here. Welcome aboard. Figured we'd have you on this week because you were going to be on the Slayer monthly bit, but all of Australia's internet was down that day, so that wasn't possible.
Yes, yeah, Optus wiped out basically, I think it was 20 million people, I think they said was affected, something like that. Oh, no, 10 million people, I think.
But, Jesus.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, 10 million people with Optus all lost it. They say it wasn't a cyber attack, but... Given what happened a year or so ago when they had all our identities taken and had to fork out for new licenses and everything, I think they just pulled the plug when it happened and just waited for it to go away before they plugged them back in.
Damn. But, wow, okay, that's something. That's certainly a way to start the show. But, you know, the other way I like starting the show is thanking our experienced here Patreon members for which RSBNB Update would not be possible without them. So this week I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C, Drama Free, Jason S, Jesse W, Keski, Ricky A, Rippeth, Runestar, and the Naked Captain. You'll learn more about what the experience tier is later on in the podcast when we talk about some of the other Patreon offerings that we have on the board. But in the meantime, you can find me in game at Shane12088. Tanis can be found at Tanis79, and Parnassus is just Parnassus. We also have our community Discord at update.show/discord, and the friends chat in-game is Bits Bytes. Alrighty, folks. Like I mentioned, I said a traditional RSBNB update this week, and what I meant by that was that we have an update, we have patch notes, we have some news about a live event, we have some JMont conversation, we have a live stream, And we have a behind the scenes. Like how long has it been since we've had all of those?
Like 2018 or something, right? Like
it's been a long time. Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, just before, yeah, probably 2019, just before COVID hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we're gonna start with the graphical updates because this week, Entrena got graphically updated as well as some materials, and you know. I have to say, I took these graphical updates to Earth because for people who know Earth, he'll know that he's very much a traditional RuneScape player. He is as traditional as you could get, as close to if you could imagine having somebody who is a old school player but who plays RuneScape 3. And of course, Earth hosted this podcast before back in the 2015 era. So I took these graphical updates of Entrena to him. And they actually passed his list, believe it or not. They actually passed the Earth test in that they're traditional enough that they evoke how old Entrena felt, but it iterated it to a point of view where it was just, you know, feeling more modern and fresh than what we had before. So overall, I feel like Entrena has kind of landed on the sweet spot, and that's kind of what we want to see with graphical updates going forward.
Brings up, it really makes it look like it's part of the game now and not something that was, oh yeah, we had that years ago and just got forgotten.
Yeah.
You you sure that's why, Shane, and not because Earth is probably the only person that actively still goes to
I go to Antrona.
I mean, you probably ride in a balloon together while you're crafting your law rooms too, don't you?
I mean, I haven't taken the balloon network myself. I go from Port Sarah, but I do go to Antrona to use the Great Pops. Patch. Yeah, the Great Patch. Yeah, of course, as you can probably imagine with that. So, and I think the thing we also have to talk about with these graphical updates is that seemingly with this, with the team involved in it, I think it's just Black Witch and Alex still working on these. And I'm sure if they're out there listening to this, they'll correct us if I'm wrong. But, you know, based on that, you know, it's just two JMods working on this at this point in time. And I think when we look at it from that perspective, we can see that they finally reached a point with these graphical updates where they can do them in a way that is in effect pipeline, so that they know what they're getting into and they have a methodology behind them to bring it up to that standard look and feel. And it's at a point where it doesn't, you know, suck out too much of the production timetable, that they don't need to, you know, allocate huge, huge blocks of time like they did with that, you know, hypothetical Varrock update we might have seen, and the Sears Village update that got white boxed but eventually canned. So
yeah, still like to see that updates. Guy.
What was that?
All of
I was saying I still like to see him do Sears soon.
Okay. But what were you saying, Tanis?
So I was just gonna say, like, all of the graphical updates we've seen in the last, I'd say, year and a half. You know, all the ones that Mod Black Witch had been, you know, kind of heading up have really done a lot in the way of, like, modernizing the game without, you know, changing it too much. But the little things that, you know, I have noticed is there's always more contrast. There's always
deeper colors.
And I don't know, it's just, it's usually easier for me to see. And Tron is a little bit different, right? It's a different little place. So
yeah.
I didn't pick up as much of that, but I'm sure it was there. It's just, you know, with my stuff, but that's something that I've noticed, like I said, over the last like year or so. And I cannot wait until they're able to get to some places where I really hope they get to Karamja.
Did they do Karamja?
Yeah, well, but...
Oh, no. They did the areas around, like, the waterfall and whatnot to the south, right?
They did part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, Mod Black Witch and that, I mean, kudos to her, because and the other one, because really, that work, it doesn't affect gameplay, but it just makes it feel, you know,
you're playing a game from 2023.
Exactly. Yeah. It just brings it up to date, makes it feel like the world is all together. Because it is jarring when you go from somewhere like Anachronia or something, and then you go up to Relica, and it's just like, oh, you know, it's like two totally different games. So
yeah, and you know, Zant was also going to be here this week, but he's under the weather. And the one thing that he said from seeing this is that this really doubles down on what they were talking about, how, you remember, they were trying to establish in 2020 after archaeology, they were trying to establish that graphical style and that art direction for RuneScape 3, right? Well, I mean, here we are. It's since been implemented. So so that's another thing that I think we take away from this, that it's not just, you know, making things look better, it's that, you know, it's just bringing things in line with a level of consistency that they don't have before.
Yes.
Yeah. But the next thing on that list of graphical updates is, of course, the Fremenek province, everywhere north of the river, through Relica, the Crabs and the Icy Hunter area is where they're working on next.
Which I'm looking forward to, because I still go up there a fair bit.
Oh, really? What for?
clues. There's a lot of clues and that up there and, yeah, that type of stuff. So I go and get my hides every day for summoning when I eventually take that to 200 mil. So, you know, you're always running up through there.
All right. Well, go ahead, Tanis.
Yeah. Well, and so I don't go up there a lot normally, but that's something I remember in Fresh Start was going up there for Bane and stuff. And it's so white everywhere.
And, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
That yeah, that's what I'm really curious to see because it's just blinding white. Like I had to do a lot of finagling of filters and different things to get up there. But yeah.
Good. And you know, and I think the thing that really encapsulates it is that not only was it the graphics and the, you know, the skybox lighting and whatnot, but there's little torches and whatnot along the walkway. And those are all emitting light in the same way of the point lights that was added, that tech that they added with the Sentistan Asylum. So if you know, you get down on a low level and you make it like you're actually walking through, it creates a very, very nice level of ambience there. So it's perfect. Perfect. But that's not all for graphical updates this week. My pants look more green, believe it or not, with the saturation update they did. I don't know if you guys noticed outfits looking better at all?
I have everything turned off other than my Master Max cape, so I don't really pay attention to that.
Okay, and the thing was that this is even on the game's base outfits. So I used the courier pants, and it almost looked as though they were a bit of a washed out green before, right? And you could almost see like a bit of gray kind of shining through them. But with this, they're actually the green color that they're supposed to be. And I think the thing that we also take away from this is that there were some of the gold reflections in game that previously were kind of, I guess you could say, maybe a bit washed out. And the changes this week have also pushed those up to the next level as well. So that's something that they did this week that was mod Blackwidge and mod Ramen project. So I don't necessarily know what the tech is behind it, but what they said in the news post is using the proper title is that a default non-metal specular value changed. And my knowledge of that is that you have a number of layers, like the diffuse layer and the specular layer on any kind of material that you have in game. And then based off of that, that tells the game engine how it's going to reflect light. So by changing those, they were able to bring out a number of changes through a various set of outfits. And they have some actually really, really stark examples on the news post here, specifically in the red, just showing, you know, how much more they were able to make the red pop, and even, you know, things as well like dark outfits pop even better now as well. And I don't know if they had to do this on a per outfit basis or if it was just something they could do across the entire game, and then, you know, based on that kind of, I guess, would speak to the volumes of the kind of changes that they were looking at on this. But well, once again, I guess these are just our early Christmas presents from the J-Mods. So the early graphical Christmas gifts. So
and we will if we're gonna need those greens, right, and reds, and
yeah,
deeper, richer colors and blacks. Apparently,
what do we need the black for?
I mean, there's just, you know, things, Christmas presents.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Black Santa hats.
Mm. We already have one of those. I forget who I was talking to about this, the upcoming Rare the Black Party hat, but we'll get there after. Somebody I was talking to, and, you know, we kind of predicted that. But overall, a number of good changes as well on all the cosmetics out there. So I mean, as much as it pains me to say, just zoom in and see if your outfit looks any better.
It actually, when you were talking, I did zoom in on mine and have a look, and yeah, the blues are a much better blue, not sort of that washed out grayish blue now.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what it was across the board, just making things seem a little bit less washed out. So,
ooh, I wonder if this will make my stripper outfit look better.
Your what?
I'm a stripper and G-strings.
I've got, you know, like those purple kind of bell bottoms, and then the masquerade ball mask, and then the goby, like just some chest paint, like the swag stick, like what up? Yeah.
You weren't wearing that last time I ran into you.
No, it's been a while since I brought out the Chippendale outfit. Yeah, it's, I hadn't done that one for a while.
Oh my god. Oh, if only they knew what they enabled. But I mean, I'm sure there's some world out there where they're, you know, imagining what kind of outfit in the game would go best in a gentleman's club.
We got to get Shane outfitted in the pimp outfit.
Dude, the possibilities are endless, dude. I mean, I've had a Trump outfit before. Because you got the remember there's a briefcase. You can kind of make like a suit.
Orange hair.
Yeah. You can.
Well, in a year's time, you might need to be breaking that out again.
Well, you can even have a woman in a skirt, and they'll do like handstands. And if you do it just right, you can put down like a protein. What's the bubbles?
The what?
Oh yeah, no, you can. You put down what? I made a video with it. It was funny.
What do you want to put down? And then,
you know, one of those like bubbles. What are they? Divine? Yeah, like a divine.
Like
bubble.
The divine fish bubble.
Mm-hmm. But if the character is in front of it, like it, you don't see the bubble, and you just see everyone grabbing towards the skirt.
Oh my god!
So I have a video of Donald Trump grabbing. It's good stuff.
RuneScape's not that kind of fantasy game.
I mean, but you can make so many fantasy outfits. Like, you know, I've got a Targaryen outfit that's keepsaked.
I mean, the one I definitely remember is your Elven Sniper outfit. You ever bring that out?
Once in a while, I do. I do. When I'm feeling nostalgic, I will crawl around with the ghillie suit.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that being said, let's move on to some patch notes. But just, you know, in general, as it always goes with these updates, wonderful, wonderful work all across the board, graphics wise with everybody involved. But this week we have game jam patches for Dungeoneering of all things, which I guess makes sense for double XP coming for people who want to go there.
Well, they're bringing the hole back, are they? Because that's the only way anyone chains it anymore, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the only way I like to train Dungeoneering. So
that's the way I do it. I got everything unlocked down there in the achievements, so it's always in the hole when it happens now.
Yeah, and I mean, if I ever need tokens, I just go sit at an ED and farm those. So, but the dungeon map on mobile has been moved to be beside the mini map. I have no idea where it was before.
Never did it on mobile, so it
sounds like a recipe for disaster there. You're also now able to click behind a door, and that will do the skill check as well as open the door. So the full action is that you're able to click on the door behind skill checks to begin attempting them, which, you know, you always used to have to kind of, you know, like line up to do it properly.
I mean, if I liked Dungeoneering, I would like that, so.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's like 3 or 4 people out there. That's really awesome.
Here's another one. Increase the base accuracy within Dungeoneering to be in line with the other areas of the game.
I didn't understand this. Okay, so number one, what aren't we changing? Don't we have a beta going on right now?
We do, but that would not affect Dungeoneering. That would not affect Dungeoneering because Dungeoneering hooks into none of the systems in-game. Dungeoneering has its own skill set. That's why there's no mining and smithing rework in Dungeoneering. That's why it went to great lengths to add divination to Dungeoneering. And what happened when EOC came out was that, of course, we got, you know, the EOC action bars and whatnot. But those sorts of changes also needed to be made within Dungeoneering, hence why they can increase just the base accuracy within Dungeoneering.
Because Dungeoneering is not a skill, it's a maxi minigame.
Wow, that's...
Oh, yeah, like the lore, like the Jagex lore behind it is that we all know that Dungeoneering was the last project that Andrew Gower worked on. But the other thing behind it is that the Dungeoneering code actually started from another procedural generated game he was working on.
Well, that explains a lot.
That's why it's a game within a game, really.
Yeah, that explains a lot.
So,
but that's crazy, though. I did not realize. I mean, I didn't realize the combat system itself didn't match. That's crazy.
Right. And I mean, obviously, you can use all your abilities and whatnot, but the modifiers that they brought in with EOC are obviously based off of this, you know, changeable. So, let's see, which one next? The Daemon Hunt.
One thing I do like in there is the mastic creatures can't be killed, because if you go in there to make your own armor and such,
right.
I forever killing, or you're killing the creatures and an AoE hits and a bang, it does that, and you want that for your your armor.
Right, that happened. So that happened last time I went in there, you know, using ranged greater ricochet, just killed everything in the room, and
exactly
the mastic creature. Right. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
So that is a good one, that one too.
Aye, aye, aye. Okay. Farming resources will now more accurate match the player's farming skill at high levels.
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah. And the way this works behind the scenes is that your crop output is based off of a constant held on that plant, but it's also influenced by your farming level. So I'm wondering what was happening here is maybe this just wasn't scaling past 99 properly. Because as we know, the way the game works is that there's all sorts of, you know, weird edge cases like this that come up from time to time, unfortunately. So they also rebalanced Kalgar, the warmonger boss fight, to be difficult but manageable. So I'm betting I don't know this boss. I don't know if any of you guys are Dungeoneering fans enough to know this.
He was never hard.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was going to say.
Right,
I don't remember it being
the only hard one is that stupid one that I want to buy the pet so I can just kick it. Is Blink?
Yeah, I was going to say I still hate Blink. Blink sucks. Yeah.
Blink's the only hard one in Dungeoneering.
I'm wondering.
Really.
I'm wondering with this if maybe Kalgar the Warmonger was never updated for EOC then. Because you know that happens to a lot of the bosses out there after EOC, is that you bring EOC to them, you'll just, you know, walk right over them. And that kind of reads like what's happening here.
Okay.
But that's like any Dungeoneering boss, right? Like,
also, I'd just like to report that being on video here, people watching video will see that I just spilled water all over myself. So
that's,
I guess,
why
that's
your water.
Oh, come on! Of course.
That's why you use bottles, because it's a lot easier. They don't drip out the sides.
That's why I use this vodka, because it's clear.
And the last one, change the requirement for the port enter achievement, and players now only need to create a porter of passage 5 or above. Yes. You guys remember how insane this was, right?
Probably. It doesn't sound like something I've done.
Yeah. So the way it worked was that this actually got more difficult as you leveled up, because the achievement here initially, I'm trying to remember what it was before. I'm going to just go back on the wiki here and pull it up, but the idea behind it is that the portent of passage was a way that lets you push through doors, right? And you needed to not have that skill requirement. So the higher your levels, the more difficult it was. So previously, it was create and use a portent of passage 5 to attempt to pass through a skill door. But now it's just that you have to create it. You don't have to use it.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
So you would have an easier time at doing this if you were mid-leveled versus someone who was already maxed.
Yeah.
So you would need like a 103 door if you were 99 all, right?
Took me ages to get that one done.
So, yeah. And, you know, I think this one's on the Dungeoneering task set. So whoopee for that. Shows how much I love task sets. And yeah, people can see here that I'm still wet, but that's okay. Anyways,
there's one over the Dungeoneering out of context. Where is Reed when we need him?
All right, I'll make a note for that one, and we'll pass that one off to somebody like Reed or Sirion to enjoy with. But, I mean, we're just going to do the show. I'm not going to, you know, go change or anything. It'll dry off by the time we're done.
There you go.
So
dry.
That's it for patch notes this week, everybody. Maybe at this point in time, we should just go do Patreon right now, just so we can kind of center ourselves and say, and instead of having you guys focusing on all the little shiny objects in the room. But this week, I'd like to thank Alvaro L, Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvid Zell, Chulbura, Chunk the Monk, Dominic R, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Ling01, Nate the Great, Nick G, Pernasius, Renhonk, Ricky A, Rippeth, Runestar, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Tabby, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Ukulele Steve, Zant, and Zazicon. Big, huge thank you to all of our Patreon supporters here. It means the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb. There you can sign up for as little as a dollar a month. You gain access to all of our monthly bits. Those are our monthly bonus shows. And the most recent one that's up on the feed now is Fixing Slayer, or as we answered in the show, you know, why is Slayer a skill amongst other things? We had a good discussion about how Slayer could be enhanced. Tanis, did you enjoy that in the end?
Yeah, in the end it came out pretty good.
Yeah, and that's what we always do on the monthly bits, right? We start with one question and then see where that goes, and the best way to do that is to just think of them as RSBNB update episodes that go in depth, really deep, on a singular topic. Other topics that we have that might be relevant at this point in time include our tier list on Dailyscape and the skills. We also, of course, have one on holiday events. Just so many other monthly bits that are out there as well. We have ones on summarizing RuneScape's years, like a year tier list. Like, was 2007 the true golden era for RuneScape? That sort of thing. We answer all those sorts of things on the monthly bit, and you gain access to that entire catalog for as little as a dollar a month. We also have our VIP tier for $3 a month, which includes a special Discord channel and rank on our Discord, as well as a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as high-quality stereo versions of the show, and for our insider tier. Yeah, this one's important right now because you receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week, and you also get access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show, but we're also going to be sending a Christmas card out. So for everybody that signed up by December 1st of this year as a Patreon Insider member, you sign up there, you'll get a Christmas card from RSBNB Update, a nice little festive piece that you can put on your mantle or put on your desk and just have our thanks around the holiday season for supporting us. So that's $5 a month at patreon.com/RSBNB. And of course, we also have the experienced tier, which is sold out. Those people get a shout out at the start of the podcast, also have the ability to listen to RSBNB Update live and have a Q&A with us before we begin the show. But there's also the mail outs for that tier as well, which those ones just went out and I heard back from people. People really enjoyed the postcard that went out this time. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, patreon.com/RSBNB. And sign up by December 1st if you want the 2023 RSBNB Update Christmas card. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks.
Thanking you.
All right. So let's continue on here. Double XP is happening. now, as you guys are listening to this a few hours before or after the recording here, there's going to be a new mechanic this time around. Of course, Nick the Trader is also going to be there, but there's also something here appearing called Double XP Tokens. Tokens that are earned by interacting with Double XP Spirits that are earned intermittently by skilling or by using Proteans and Dummies. And alternatively, if you have any unwanted Proteans, you can convert up to 10,000 of them daily to use them on something more valuable to you. And these DXP tokens can be exchanged during any DXP live for stars, skilling outfit pieces, elite skilling outfit pieces, and even a few items from the Vic the Trader store. And this token store will be available only during Double XP live events. And I think the thing that people are most interested in, and you know, based on what we heard about Yak Coins, tokens earned throughout the event persist into future events.
Which is a big thing on these type of things.
Yep. That to me made a huge difference. I saw a lot of, you know, a lot of these announcements that we're going to talk about, you can see community feedback at play with them, right? Like you can, they've been kind of tailor-made from things that we've, you know,
that we talked about and heard about, and you know, it's going to be using the Saren Spirit tech, the Pumpkin tech, and the interesting thing about these ones compared to the Pumpkins and the Saren Spirits is that the DXP spirits will now automatically claim if they time out. So even if you AFK, you'll still get the tokens.
Wow.
Yeah, I love that just because sometimes I miss them even if I'm not AFK. Like it's
some areas you just can't see them. If you go to do divination on World 79, to try and find your Saren spirit amongst all those people can be just impossible. So, or if you're working on World 84, so that is a great thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mind having to claim. I mean, we do have that potion that does it, but the potion only lasts 6 minutes.
Oh, and it's a waste of money.
It is a big waste of money. I bought a couple once when I was doing some AFK, but you can go an hour without seeing a Saren spirit. And then if you drink six doses of potion, it's cost you, however many mil it is, and you know, you get nothing. It's like if those potions lasted an hour, I think, or even 30 minutes, it'd be a much better thing. But to claim automatically, kudos to them, because that is a great thing to have happen.
And of course, we don't know how many tokens each spirit will give, but some of the costs, a small prismatic star is 600, and that doubles for each star up. So medium is 1,200, large 2,400, and huge 4,800. You're also able to buy things like protean power-ups, prolongers, cinder cores, pulse cores, the oil of enchantment, the coin of enchantment. And I think the biggest thing here, rather than, like you said, Tanis, going to the Pawn Stars place for your outfit, 2,500 tokens a piece for a piece of the skill outfit.
Yeah, and remember, the other nice thing is this is really letting you kind of move around some proteins that you may not be using anyway.
Right.
In 10,000 a day, that could add up.
There's also the special outfits too, if you don't want to, farm them through invention.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's interesting. And those are
a great idea.
Those are 8,000 a piece.
I mean, I've got all the outfits, but this is a fantastic idea and just gives that, sort of more, opens everything up to people who, some of those outfits are tough to get on some of the things you have to do. So,
well,
it really opens it up.
Yeah, what if you're let's just say you're a RAF account for double XP, right? And as that's building up, like, you can really take advantage, like, of this.
There's also exquisite weapons that were initially on Treasure Hunter and after in Vic's store. There's also the Tazar Whip as well, which was the Treasure Hunter reward from the Smashing Relics promotion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which last was on Vic's store in 2022. And I think this makes things a lot more accessible than just relying on trading in for Vic, right? Because this is through passive play and you're not making that decision to give up that XP. And we all know how expensive Vic's store gets after handing in certain amounts of XP.
Yep.
So there's that. Starfire outfits, grotesque armor, Slayer masks.
Yep.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying about, like, if you're a low to mid level, like, or, you know, low to mid level account, like, this is great because you could get. You could get some skill outfit pieces. You might not have invention yet. You can get Slayer mask. You may not, you know, it takes a while to get Shattered World points to get your mask. So, like, this could be a pretty cool promotion, especially if someone is going to be putting in, you know, time for double XP.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. The only thing I wish that was on these tables, but isn't, and, you know, maybe this is more of a Vic item, I wish they put skilling dummies on here.
Anybody yeah, else? You buy those in the oddment store anyway, don't you?
Yeah, but it's limited. It's limited.
Yeah,
it would make sense, though, because it is a double XP item, in my, you know, to me. Like, if I'm using dummies, I'm only using dummies on double XP.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because I don't have any of the sort of workbenches either, do they?
No, and I think those and I think that's a line between regular and premium items. And what I'm seeing on this list are a lot more regular items compared to premium items.
Hmm.
So.
But yeah, good on them, because I mean, I love the way they're doing this, and it just sort of gives you sort of a bit more incentive to you know, to participate in double XP.
Yeah, and I think the only thing left outstanding here is, you know, how many tokens do you get per spirit, right?
Hmm.
Well, so. And once again, like, important to, I think, note, this ain't costing us anything.
No, it's passive.
If anything. Yeah, it's passive, and if anything, like, things that maybe you got in the past that you didn't really want that you did pay for, you now can get a use out of, like, on some of those proteins, right? Like,
right, and then you evaluate, you know, is it worth me, you know, using the 2-3 protein conversion rate, or do I just convert to these coins if there's something else I want? Double XP tokens, rather. So. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll see how this goes based on somebody who, you know, AFKs for, you know, 6 to 8 hours a day, see what kind of XP boost they're able to get with that. And that's another thing I'll highlight. You'll note that there's no actual XP on here. It's just the XP lamps. So that'll make people happy, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it seems they hit the notes right on that one.
Yeah, no, I love that they're just doing stars, so it's just adding to your bonus XP. It's just buying XP outright.
Yeah. There's also a double XP marketplace bundle that you can buy once. It costs a bond, and this one includes medium protein packs, 5 large stars, protein prolongers and power-ups, 5 skill dummy crates. I guess that's where you get the skill dummies. 25 pulse cores, 25 cinder cores, Silverhawk down, tight springs, and bonus 5,000 tokens. And this is purchasable once. So you could, I guess you could just do that, and there's your, you know, 5 large, how many was it? 5 medium skill dummy crates. So, I mean, still not as many as some people would like. I know people out there who dislike Slayer that want to do this.
To be perfectly honest, it's not the best bundle I've ever seen.
No, it's not. And it's not hideously overpowered, too, which I think is important.
I would love to see.
I would probably buy keys. I feel like if you got lucky, you're going to get more out of your keys.
Yeah, but I also see this as being a bundle that somebody who didn't like keys would be able to purchase at least the first one, because the second one includes 2 times earned keys, which, I mean, if you don't like keys, you're not going to use them. So
I'd love to see, like they do with the skill outfits, where you can trade a piece for a piece with another player. I'd love to be able to trade those skill dummies with another player. So if I've got 5 Slayer ones, which I don't want to use, and Shane has 5 Hunter ones that he wants to, so we can just swap them over with each other. So they're not actually sellable, but they're tradable.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Also, from the 8th of November until the end of the year, Bonds will give you more. They'll give 16 days of membership instead of 14, 18 Treasure Hunter keys instead of 15, and 234 instead of 195 rune coins. So I see 2 potential things happening here with this. One, they're trying to see if increasing the value, like the value given to players of Bonds, makes them sell more. I think that's option number 1. And I think option number 2 is that they want to increase the number of Bonds that are used. There might be too many in the economy, or they just need them to come in on the ledger sheet right now, because people might not know this, but the way it works is that if somebody buys a Bond, say, back in February of 2023, but doesn't use it until November of 2023, that $5 sale or $7.99 sale, where I am, of that bond doesn't show on the sales ledger until now, even though somebody paid cash for it back in February.
Yeah, which is probably why you're seeing the increased membership days, because if you were holding on to a bunch of them and you were going to use them for that, you could cash them now, get that 16 days, rather than holding on to them, cash them later.
Three bonds goes from 45 to 51 days. That's almost a week extra membership.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and for the people who buy your premium.
I don't know. Are you still able to do that? Are you still able to buy Premier Club with bonds?
Yep, it's 20 bonds still, but that's a lot of people buy them throughout the year to use, right, that they don't get used till December, because that was when it first started, sort of late November, early December.
Right.
So I think you'll see a big influx of the bonds being used then.
Yeah.
They may be trying to get some of them out before that happens.
Right, and one thing I always found odd is that a lot of the cosmetics are priced just above that 195 rune coin marker, so you got to buy
200. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 200 or 220 rune coins, and you can't. I've got to buy 2 bonds and have a bunch left over.
So that kind of fixes that here for this. But just a note, if anybody out there is planning to buy bonds or needs anything from the bond marketplace going forward. But next up, we're going to a post that was posted by Mod Shrike. Welcome back. Asking the question, bespoke mechanics and quests, yay or nay? So, Mod Shrike wants opinions about quests. Specifically, she says, I want RS3 to make more quests. That's my butchering, not the posts. I'm currently looking at ways to improve our quest development process so that from a JMod point of view, they're easier to get to release. So with that, I want to ask you, the players, what do you think about bespoke mechanics in quests? So these are mechanics that are created for and used in a specific quest and not seen in the rest of the game. These include Moya's mind hacking in Nether, the rituals performed in Lost Grove and Twilights of the Gods, and the dinosaur invasion in Desperate Measures. If you like them, why? Is it the novelty, the new challenge, or the feeling that you're doing something special for a story? If you don't like them, what's the reason? Do they feel out of place? Does their tutorialization get in the way? Do you feel like you're wasting time on them on something you'll never need again? And are there examples of these kinds of mechanics that you really like or don't like? Specifically interested in the whys behind this. I find it very interesting that the dinosaur puzzle was mentioned. And you said that one was actually okay for you.
I mean, out of all of them, but when you think about the other things, because at first when I heard spoke mechanics, I was thinking like spokes on a wheel, right? Like, because the dinosaur puzzle, they were coming in from different places. Oh. And then I'm thinking about all the monolith, and then I'm thinking, remember that pirate quest, and all of those mechanics. They're all just a pain in the ass for me. In my opinion, in general, it's a pain in the ass. I don't enjoy it.
Why?
So it's exactly why. That's because when I'm doing a quest, I'm doing it for a couple reasons. Story, number one. Number two, I'm cool with fighting stuff if I need to fight stuff, but I don't like that react. It is too hard with the way this game plays to do these tower defense kind of strategies. It's very difficult to get from one.
So you're specifically talking about the tower defense style ones.
Yeah, like I mean, the other ones are just a like nuisance.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the other ones are a nuisance because I just don't have any care to really.
Like here's an example of one that I see, like the personality splitting one in Dead and Buried, or the sliding map puzzle in Dead and Buried. Those would also fit into this category.
Yeah. Don't need them.
And okay,
and they're always the pain in the ass mechanics, right? Like I've been thinking.
And you say that as a non-quester, I'll make that caveat, which is okay.
Yes,
but my opinion on this is a little bit different, and I walk a very difficult line with this because I always see quests as being, of course, the primary vessel of story, but at the same time. There can be these kinds of mechanics in there, but if there's the opportunity to have more quests, I would rather have more quests. And the thing that I say is that if we're looking at things like the moving the raptor around, like the sliding puzzle, specifically in terms of the dinosaur invasion one, if we're talking about these sorts of things, I think we could have gone without those, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I want to be careful of before saying is, you know, before saying I don't need bespoke mechanics in quests, I think what I need to be careful of is that if I say no, let's not have these going forward, I just want to make it clear that I still expect at some point there to be a next generation of the light puzzle from Morning's End Part 2. I still expect there to be at some point, hopefully, another elemental workshop, that sort of thing. I still expect there to be another puzzle like we had with the coins in Glowfrey. So
Sliskeet's Endgame.
Well, even those things were kind of revisited, right? So like if you think at the light puzzle, I mean, that's in 2-3 quests, right? So
yeah.
That I'm more forgiving of. But like look at, you know, that part of Dishonor Amongst Thieves that your stuff's coming in from different angles and different places, and it just screwed me for the longest time.
So if I'm going to summarize your issue with them, they're primarily an accessibility thing.
Yeah, but they don't add anything, right? Like, look at the Light Within. Remember when the little trees were going, like... What did that add?
Yeah.
See, for me, I enjoy that type of stuff because it's something different. I always enjoy those types. And yeah, some of them are frustrating. And I can certainly see from Tanis's point of view where accessibility, because, I mean, my eyes aren't the best and I sometimes miss them. But, you know, I have no issue with them. I do enjoy them because they are something different and breaks up, you know, it gives a quest a sort of a unique feel for things like that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, that's kind of that's the other side of the coin, right? So, I mean.
Right. And I guess my only question of this would be before I say, skip over them if it makes it easier to get more quests out, is that would this make more quests look like as an Audra's quest, I guess is the question.
Well, that would be cool.
Yeah, and
more like as an Audra's quest?
Yeah, that was a really good quest. Yeah, that was a fun quest. It was just like a 2-hour long narrative adventure, right? But at the same time there was no combat, there was no puzzles, there were no mechanics in it. Is that I think for me the mechanics, let's just call them bespoke mechanics, are worthwhile if they come in the form of a puzzle. But if they're just something that we need to, you know, spend 5 minutes on as a bit of an artificial roadblock, maybe we can leave them behind.
Mm. Yeah, I love puzzles, but as you said, if it's just there to add time to the quest and doesn't add anything to it, then yeah, get rid of it.
Or there's another thing too, like if it's a storytelling vehicle, right? Then I think they make sense. So as you can see, it's a really hard line to walk, because if they're storytelling vehicles, if they're puzzles, sure, have at it. But at the other time, if it's something that's just, you know, designed to fill time in a quest or kind of present a different style for it as what I put in the Dinosaur Invasion, no, probably not. But I think we would have had, I don't know, and see, this is the thing. I don't feel like we're qualified to make these decisions here, because what would Twilight of the Gods have looked like without the World Guardian puzzle, right?
Yeah.
More like as an Ondrith quest, which was, I mean, that's kind of my style.
Right, and then the issue with that...
For me, I like that.
Then the issue with that, we kind of head back to the ESO style of quest, where it's just narrative and a bit of combat sometimes.
And that's it. I mean, I enjoyed as an Ondrith quest, but I would never put it in my sort of, you know, class as a great quest, because there wasn't a lot of play involved or thinking involved. It was, you know, I like those ones where I've got to sit there and just puzzle out something and how am I going to do this? And you're right clicking things to see, can I push or pull or throw it further or things like that, you know, working those type of things out.
So I think if we could summarize this then, is that if you're going to do them, make them worthwhile and feel rewarding, right?
Yeah, and make them feel like they belong in it and not just, oh, we need to add an extra 10 minutes to this quest, so let's throw something in here.
And also have it be so that puzzles can still fit into it. Because I feel like some of RuneScape's quintessential quests are puzzles, right?
Of course, yeah.
Some of RuneScape's quintessential pain in the asses are puzzles and quests. That's 100% true.
Yeah.
I was just sitting here thinking of, like, what is it? They changed it now. They made it better. But do you remember the, there's a vampire quest. That was a puzzle. And it was so
the
hard.
The mind trip one? No, I'm sorry, that's not
this
vampire.
One was like lights and bubbles or something. It was in the vampire city thing. I don't know. Now they have it to where it tells you the color when you hover over, but
it should
used to not do that. It used to not do that. It was so hard.
You know, another mechanic. I think that I want to talk about when it comes to questing mechanics. God damn it, my mind just went blank. Oh, I was just imagining a quest. What was it? Oh, I'm sure it'll come back to me at some point. But it was generally in the same vein that, you know, let's just make sure that if we're going to do these, they're worthwhile.
You're talking the Lord of Amperium one, aren't you?
That must be what Tannis was talking about.
Yeah.
It might be.
Where you had to rotate all the rings and get all the blue light flowing into the center and things like that.
I think so, yeah. I mean, and I get it, right? Because, like, people that like RuneScape Quest, that's the experience that they want, right? Like, they want a puzzle. They want the stuff. Whereas I would say, like, I kind of like that other style of quest, right? Where it's mostly story, maybe a little combat. I mean, basically, like you said, Shane, like that's...
Like as an Andres quest.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that's my kind of, you know, that's my kind of style.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure this out. I know it was a recent one. Extinction, I have had...
Dead and Buried?
No.
Push?
No, but I can say... Would Erebus count as a bespoke quest mechanic? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you only did it once. Mm-hmm. Thank God. Right?
That one was a pain in the ass.
I'm just going through the quest list here. The needle skips, and that's another thing. If we say no to this, would we potentially get needle skips, right? Because that was also a really neat mechanic, the dictionary there.
Yeah, that was fun.
That's true.
So...
And that's the thing. I mean, you're not going to please 100% of the people 100% of the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Tannis and I agree on a lot of things, but, you know, he's totally against these. I'm totally for them because, to me, that uniqueness of that, you know, makes it fun and makes it different and gives you a break from everything else.
Yeah. And I also wanted to pull up Avernick's comment on the Reddit. He told me he made it there, so I thought I'd highlight that. Avernick has, of course, been on with us for a number of our recent quest coverages, and he said that a bespoke mechanic is as good as a plot reveal, and mechanics in quests are what makes them interesting. Otherwise, you may as well be reading a lore book, which is kind of the angle you were going with, Tannis.
I mean, you know, that's... I mean, I think it's all... This is all fair, and it just comes down to what kind of style, you know, you personally like best. Like I said, I think your traditional RuneScape player that likes quests, like your traditional quester, that's what they like, because that's the kind of thing that those kind of people like.
Yeah.
Right? Like, which is just, I'd just rather have a different style. But it's mostly because things have, like, just been very challenging in quest to get through, you know,
right,
sometimes.
I remember the mechanic I wanted to talk about, and once again, I'm wondering if this fits into that category. You guys remember the combat systems in Succession and Daughter of Chaos? Where it was kind of that limited combat system where you got three abilities?
Yep.
Yeah.
But might have been better at this point just using your own abilities there. Granted, it did make things simpler, but imagine cutting those out. You could, you know, push, 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 get more out.
I mean, I guess you could have. I guess there is...
Like, honestly, this is turning out to be a mixed bag for me.
Well, and if you cut out some of them, you're cutting... They're there for thematical purposes, and it's weird if you remove them when you think about that. Like,
I don't know if you'd have them, you know, completely removed. But
the thing is, I mean, yeah, there are some bad ones, but there are a lot of good ones. So, you know, it's... Yeah, you can't blanket say, yeah, they're great, or yeah, they're bad, because, you know, there are a variety of them, and there are a variety of, you know, different ones that do different things. And I don't know. It is a tough one.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, I think I just want to summarize this by saying, they have to be worth it to the quest. They can't be annoying from a gameplay perspective. And because of that, if it's going to mean more quests, I would much rather say that we don't need them. But at the same time, for me, I don't want that to mean that we won't get puzzles or puzzle quests.
I also think, too, that the ones that are bad are really bad. And so it sticks out in my mind.
Right.
Right, because like I remember that week of doing the same thing over every, you know. So like I just think the ones that are bad like are really bad.
And maybe they could have something where, you know, like I can't remember, it was one of the glider ones where if you can't do it, you just pay them a certain amount of coins.
That was Monkey Madness for the puzzle
Monkey
box.
Madness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just do something like that for people. So we're, for you know, for people who do have issues like Tanis, that he can doesn't have to be frustrated by it and spend a week doing it. You can, okay, it's going to cost me, you know, 500,000 coins. I'm just going to pay that and continue on with the storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, would you rather not just have, you know, two or three more quests?
Oh, if they're going to give me more quests and cut back on the puzzles, I'll take that. But again, I want those puzzles to be. Oh, sorry, I want those quests to be fun quests and not just read along. You know, hand holding,
yeah,
tell me
yeah.
everything that's
and,
going on. I don't like that type.
And
of quest.
I think if we're gonna discuss the, you know, the final decision on this, it's that. If you remove these, yes, do that, but what are we doing to make sure that every quest is not as an Andra's quest with a bit of combat at the end? And
exactly.
I think if you can answer that question successfully, then I think you have full clearance to do this.
What? Okay, here's an interesting question. Where would that leave something like mysteries? They're very individual. They're not reused, but yet they're a core part
of archaeology. Yeah,
yeah.
and I think they probably made that exception just for them there.
Right. Yeah.
So, and you know, there's also one of the I think most famous or infamous puzzles at this point now in the game in archaeology. There, the Caradet puzzle that unlocks Trindane.
Yeah.
So.
Mm.
I mean, honestly, just consult with the quest community on this. They'll tell you what to do. You don't want to piss them off. And following from that, you know, everybody else out there just does the quest for the reward. Dare I say?
Yeah, I was gonna say they're the ones that actually care. The rest of us will deal with what we have to deal with because we always have.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obviously not as black and white. As that, but there's just a group of people out there who fit into those two camps, and then everybody else who, of course, is playing casually and doing the stories over a number of years. So, all right, let's move on. We also had a live stream this week. The live stream, combat Q&A with mods Doom Sponge and Ryan regarding the combat beta, and like we said. It's been a long time since they all gathered together on a live stream, let alone, you know, done this and an update and behind the scenes in the week. So let's dive into some of this here. And it was very conversational. It was very flowing and there wasn't really, really huge takeaways for this. But Mod Doom did what he does best here at the start of this. He wanted to address a concern regarding polling and the beta server, specifically in terms of, as he said, the community citing concerns about the beta being a preview of changes that are guaranteed to be coming into the game. And he said that this was in regards to the Fractured Staff and Anime Dead poll that was done earlier in the year, where, you know, people hated it in the poll, right? But everybody else who actually played it in the beta and used the combat style wound up liking the change. And what he said is that their initial data here showed that, you know, people didn't like it, but over time the sentiment shifted towards people liking the changes, and that's why they did what they did. And this beta is not going to be like that. Nothing in this beta is presently on the track to coming into game.
I would I would argue that if they're going to do these beta worlds and have people vote on it, you have to spend a certain amount of hours playing it in that beta world before you're allowed to vote. Because how many people would have just said, oh, no, I don't want that to happen, and voted, and never actually went in and tried it? I mean, Shane, you were one who voted. You borrowed some money off me to buy the equipment so you could go in there, try it, and play it, and get a feel of it. Great. You have the right to vote. I never touched it. I shouldn't have a right to vote on something I know nothing about.
And that's what the data said. I think he even said that on our Behind the Crown with him.
I think he did. Yeah, that's right, because he was talking about that. People who actually played it enjoyed it, and there were a lot of people who just voted no because they just like to vote no.
But you can see how there is that knee-jerk reaction of the community ready to you know sit if these sorts of things happened here, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know, and I can't wait till we. A little further on, we're going to talk about the community actually being the dog that caught the car, and I can't wait to see what we're going to dream up to bitch about, because I don't know how it's even possible. But
so the goal, just need to act more like Steve Jobs.
Oh yeah, please. The goal with the beta right now is to get things into a more releasable state, because they can't release anything off the beta right now. So they want to do that. Then they're going to try things with respect to the identities and the abilities. So what this might mean is changing the identity of one or two combat styles. And that's where people's input will truly come in. Because we know right now melee is the bleed style, right? And they're like, does that really make sense that two hands apply bleeds, right? Does it? I don't know. I don't use the style that much. I find it too cumbersome to use.
I thought the questions... were really good with this. Like the questions that they said that they're going to be asking, they were questions I hadn't thought about. I'm like,
well, yeah, these two really know their stuff. Question. They know their stuff.
I'm like, that's really interesting. And, why is that? Like,
and we kind of touched on this last week when we were going through the beta abilities, is that you have Mod Ryan and Sponge, who, you know, are veteran J mods at this point, right? But they're also veteran RuneScape players going back decades. Mm-hmm. Which you don't really have if you look at, you know, other games out there in terms of how they do their balancing. So that's interesting. Mod Sponge is right now working on modernizing all the special attacks in game, similar to what was done with abilities. So what this means is updating them on a system side so that they can be updated quickly. So the idea with that is that they might just be able to quickly change the amount of adrenaline that something uses or the amount of damage that something does. And with this comes a series of small tweaks to special attacks. And once they're all out, the more modernized version of this will be able to tweak those adrenaline and damage values to see, you know, does anything need to be brought up? Is anything too expensive? You know, so on and so forth with that.
I feel like they're, you know, anyone that listens to the show knows I'm not a big fan of the way combat is. But I feel like these guys are making... RuneScape combat as good as it can be for what it is.
And that's the sense I got too. There's lots of times in this that they said they're, you know, waiting on engine to bring something in, like specifically when it came to the hit splats discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mod Ryan is
being able to like display so many at a time.
Yeah. Or, you know, make it so that bleeds are, you know, more natural, I guess. Mod Ryan is fine-tuning beta systems to make them ready for release, evaluating where all the styles sit, rewriting a bit of the melee style, converting constitution abilities to be consistent with what was done to the other styles. Then he'll be heading off to the defense abilities. And he said that he had a number of times on the beta and while working on this where he had to read the abilities and then dive into the code to figure out just what they did.
Yes. I thought that's probably not good, right? Like if the guy that's working on this has to like read the tool, maybe it's too complicated. Just a guess. Might be a little intricate.
Which is why I generally just use Revolution Plus Plus, because it's like, I don't understand that. What's a good action bar? I'm just going with that, and away it goes.
Yeah, and then we have our ratings of where certain abilities sit, and then we just place them on the bar in that order.
Yeah, exactly.
The next steps are to start changing things and being drastic. And the example he gave is, hey, what if we just removed a number of abilities? Would people notice if the Guthix Butterfly was gone? Would people notice if Greater Ricochet was gone?
You'd notice Greater Ricochet.
Yeah, I was going to say, I noticed that one, but Ice Asylum? No, probably never noticed it.
Yeah, so those sorts of things. And what that leads to is defining the style identity. Because they're going to be, specifically on the melee side, looking at changing the Lang special attacks. So that's the Glacier Tier 95 weapons. They're going to look at changing what that entire special attack does. And then this leads to a whole other question about the combat style, is that should there be specific dual-wield versus two-hander identities, right? Like maybe, for example, and this is me talking here, maybe two-hander hits really, really hard. And it's not necessarily something about, having the most DPS, but it's about getting the biggest hits. Whereas dual wield could be those fast hits.
Which is how I thought it worked. Like, have I been wrong?
And I mean, that's where we get to the discussion that it's the two hands that actually apply most of the bleeds.
Oh, well, okay, so melee specific, but I thought in general that's like how it's supposed to work, right? Like, dual wield faster.
Well, yeah, you're thinking back to the initial.
But dual wield, if you're dual wielding, you're going to bleed someone a lot faster than just taking a swing with one, because you're dual wielding two knives. You're going to be slicing someone who's going to be bleeding. Yeah, you take a baseball bat, you're just crushing them.
You're thinking back to the EOC dev blog there, Tannis, because that's specifically what dual wield versus two hand was back in the day.
That's what I thought. I guess I didn't keep up.
And then there was, of course, the magic wards added, range shield bows, and of course the regular shields in the dual wielding side of it is the way was supposed to be the differentiation. But obviously that's become muddied over the years, and this led to his other question: should there be a restriction on how many enemies an attack can hit? Like your Dragon Two-Hander spec, your Ceridoman God Bows, the Bombard ability. And right now, the way the targeting in RS works is that it's based off of a square rule. So a 3x3 attack will hit at most 9, a 5x5 will hit 25, and a 7x7 will hit 49, so on and so forth. Should that change? Should that rule change? Those are the sorts of things, the fundamental things, that they're considering here with this. And I don't use, special attacks enough in the other combat styles. I might, fire off a Ceridoman God Bow spec when using ranged and a Dark Bow, but that's about it. I don't, do the Switchscape game. So I'm not going to, say how these things should be changed. But I think the one thing that needs to come away from this, from somebody who is right now, I'll call myself the most experienced with Necromancy compared to the other combat styles. Granted, I'd say ranged is my best. Melee and magic are way below that. Let's just strive for some consistency here so that everything is logical and it flows, right? Do what was done for Necromancy for the other styles. Yeah. Make it so that you don't need to go to the wiki or the PVME Discord to learn how to use ranged. Make it intuitive so that the game can teach you how to use ranged and what's going to be best. Because we talked about this with Necromancy. There is no bad action bar for Necromancy, assuming you have all your basics in place. And you put the spenders first. Make it so that the other skills can function like that. So that there is no bad way to in effect hurt yourself with the other styles. And make it intuitive, I would say. And this all goes back to that special attack thing in terms of this. Is that, how many should an enemy be able to attack? If you have, 100 little things all stacked together, and they're right in front of you, shouldn't it be able to hit all of them? Maybe?
I think so. I mean, I think when you start decreasing that, that starts to feel like the fun police.
Right. And I go to other games, you know, like trash pulls and trash packs in a dungeon. You gather up all the trash, and the whole point of that is to release those AoE abilities and just melt everything. And of course, we don't have right.
Exactly. That's the whole point of that.
And we can do that in Elite Dungeons, but really, really nowhere else. So I don't know how much of an impact that would have. So I think the name of the game is consistency and making it so that the other styles are easy to learn, like Necromancy was. That's what the identities should thrive on. And maybe you start by making magic the easiest one to get into, and then put ranged and melee somewhere else, because we all know how insane the Bow of the Last Guardian is in terms of, you know, needing to have tick perfect rotations for that to work well. So,
and plus, everyone wants to be a wizard like Harry.
Right.
Harry Dresden. Right. Not that Potter wussy.
Yeah. So the next part of the stream was actually really interesting because they showed off the graphical changes for things like Death Swiftness and Sunshine, because those are 3x3 right now on the live game, the graphics of it. But you can go out further and still get the benefits of it. So what they're looking at doing is updating the visuals to match the mechanic buff. So with this, on the beta, there's going to be a 7x7 Death Swiftness and Sunshine. And the question is that too big? Because they want the visuals to match the buff.
No, it's not too big.
Not at all. Not
well,
never.
It's a question match of it. if you can see other people's, right?
Yeah, but even so, I don't think that's a.
Who gives a shit when they've got cannons sitting out there?
Oh, here we go.
Who gives
here we
a
go.
Shit about a death?
I agree. No, I think the animation should be matching it. If it's a 7x7, then the animation should be 7x7.
Right. Like, that's just weird that it does.
And you know, I'll go on that right now. I was going to talk about this later, but he also gave another example where he said, okay, you want to see kind of the stuff we're talking about in terms of, you know, hits and versus animations. Let's count how many times this ability hits the target. And I think it might have been Flurry. But he used Flurry on a dummy, and he said, "Let's count." And there, your weapon hit the target 14 times, but you only did 3 hit splats of damage. So that's another thing. Should these abilities like Flurry and whatnot be updated to deal more damage? Right.
Yes.
Flurry and Frenzy.
Yeah. No. As advertised, right? Like they
Flurry's one of the worst abilities in game right now.
Oh yeah, I can't even think of a. There's no reason to have it on there.
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing, if we're gonna pull out one key moment from this live stream, it's what you said about them leaning into the fact that this is a tile-based game, and that mechanics like Karapax Lightning and Zuck's Fire are really confusing to the player. So with that in mind, whenever new mechanics come out, they want to ensure that it's clear where an attack is going to be by focusing on that tile-based gameplay nature, because, you know, we know that that Karapax Lightning is a good, you know, 2 or 3 blocks wider than it actually is because of the way the grid-based system works.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I found that to be, I mean, that was the standout, you know, thing, the thing that stood out to me the most. And I was like, there it is. That's, you know, like that really sums it up. And And see, I'm glad that you clarified that, Shane, because I thought they were holding that as a good example, and I'm like, oh God, if we're getting more content like that.
You'll never be able to
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, and you know, for me, it became clear at the point where he said, you know, don't confuse the player.
Yes.
And another thing that Mod Sponge said, I think, reading the card explains the card, as in reading the tooltip explains the tooltip, and you shouldn't need to, you know, extrapolate from there about what's going on.
Read that and then go to the wiki to get it explained properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about this is not so much the fact of what we got on the server right now, of the accuracy changes, of the crit changes, of, you know, the damage squishing happening to the special attacks and whatnot, but just the fact that we're starting to see that this is going to be a more transformational beta about where the combat styles could go, as in, should dual-wield abilities hit twice, or should two-handed abilities hit harder? Should there be more hit splats on a target so that all of them just get put on the target and will overwrite the ones that you have, rather than just not showing some that are out there? Combining burns and bleeds and whatnot from various styles so that you and your friends could go to a target and each put a dot on there and it would combine it. Because right now, people might not realize it, and this is another case of the combat system being weird, is that if you put something like a corruption shot or corruption blast on a target, you just put that on the target. If somebody else puts corruption shot on a target, they overwrite your damage and you don't get that damage. So the thing was, is that, weird. You know, imagine, and this is where you need, you know, lots of testing to be done, because the biggest environments for this is going to be AOD and raids, because everybody goes there, puts their corruption blast on, and right now it's only one copy. But in the case of raids, you'd be dealing with multiple people, and the same thing with AOD as well, right? So it's a question of, you know, would that be too powerful in terms of overloading this? So those are the kind of transformational things that the beta is aiming to work on, and dare I say it, this is the evolution of combat 2.0.
Yeah. I was thinking more along the lines of, here, this is it. We're going to fix the combat, and you're going to shut up when we're done. Because everything is here. This is the final. This is it. When we're done with this, this is how it is.
You're never done in a live game. You're never done in a live game.
Well, that's right. Because
we could have something consistent, like you said, Shane. We could have something logical. You can have something that you can add to that doesn't turn into mud.
Right. And the thing I think that I don't know the way to do this. And I think the thing that I would like to see done in the betas and with combat in general is just make it so that you're not, in effect, you know, fighting the game. Right? Does that make sense to you guys? Make it so that you're not fighting the game.
Yeah, that's right. Make the game. The game is there to play. You should be fighting against the creatures that are there, not, oh, hang on, what am I doing with this mechanic? What's it supposed to be doing? And things like that.
Yeah. The square-based, tile-based system is a key thing, specifically with Karapax Lightning, because that's not clear, right? It's not clear where an AoE attack or where a lightning attack is damaging. Like, what if, for example, and I don't know if this is something that would be an option or whatnot, but for those kinds of attacks that are like that, why not just have, you know, like a red glow on the ground where that lightning affects?
Yeah.
Or, you know, if a boss is going to cleave the ground and cause a great amount of damage on the ground like Zuck does when he throws his sword down, why not have that show on the ground where it's going to land so you can move out of it so that you're not, in effect, trying to telegraph the animations, just give you, you know, a tick or two notice saying, hey, there's going to be an attack here, move.
Yeah. I mean, I even see that in non-tile based games.
Right, exactly, and that's why you know these changes are all good, but it also comes down to working with the bosses that we have, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can change everything, and you can make necromancy wonderful, and you can use that as the blueprint for combat, and that's fine. But everything that annoyed me about combat in PVM. In the game, before necromancy, still annoys me today.
Yeah.
It didn't change the core of combat. And if that beta can do that, I think that's where we draw the line and say we won.
Yeah, I mean...
Agreed.
We'll see. I mean,
because that was the number one thing with necromancy that... we were hoping would change, would make it so that you're not fighting the game, but you're still fighting the game with necromancy, right?
Yep, you sure are.
And it's just like, you know, even take the Raziel fight, for example. It's a question of learning the mechanics, and that's not immediately clear how to do that without watching a video. The mechanics that a boss shows should be able to be figured out by watching that boss and reacting to them with enough time.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, Raziel does that in a good case with the soul attack, but some of the other things are really, really not that clear. So,
no, I mean, no matter what I did, it seemed like I could not stop myself from just taking insane amount of damage.
Like, I'm specifically talking... I'm specifically talking about phase four when he throws his attacks. You don't know that you're supposed to run, but where are you supposed to run? There's no way of knowing where his attacks are going to land. Whereas if there was a line on the ground, you could see that. And that's what I take away from this, is that yes, we can make the other combat styles work like necromancy, and we can make them have nice tooltips, and we can make them so that they can easily be updated, and they can, you know, have their own unique identities. But the bigger transformational change, identity aside, needs to be making it so that combat is more readable in the game. And that's definitely what it comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, that would be nice. I think we're going to get more of the latter. But...
Well, yeah, right now, obviously, the beta is primarily focused on adjusting abilities, right?
But especially for the more... your hardcore PVMers are going to know exactly those spots. But casual guys like myself, I go in there, I try three or four times, and I just, stuff this, I can't work this out, and I just quit it. You know, if you had those visuals where, oh, okay, I should be stepping outside that line, bang, and I know... Okay, now I'm stepping out there, then I can attack back and those type of things. I mean, it's not enjoyable.
And for people who say it's going to be like a cheat or it's going to, you know, take the fun out of it, no, all the other big MMOs do this.
Well, yeah. It's a cheat to know where the damage is going to occur.
He knows where our damage is coming from.
Weird. I don't follow that. Train of thought,
right, but. And you know, I can guarantee you that there's going to be things in the comments that are going to say that, you know, we just need to, you know, go watch some guides and whatnot. But if you play any other MMO, if you play World of Warcraft, you play Stow, you play Elder Scrolls Online, when something's going to attack, it puts down a big glowy aura on the ground, so you know where not to stand.
And the thing is, I don't want to go and watch something else to play the game I want to play. I want to get in there and learn to play it myself.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea. I mean, the whole idea of my gaming is for enjoyment. I don't want to have to go and sit there and go, okay, I'm going to go and have to watch a half-hour video of some guy screaming at his computer and all that and, you know, getting everything there. I just want to sit there, go to the boss, and work it out myself. Yeah, I'll die a few times the first time. I don't care about that. But when I don't understand, hang on, why did I die? I didn't see whatever was happening, and it happens three times in a row. It's like, nah, that's it. I'm done for today.
Yeah, and guides are usually like, I don't necessarily, it's not like a last resort, but it's not the first thing, right? Like, I mean, usually try it, and then if you can't do it, then you grab the guide, unless it's a quest, and then I start with the guide. But, you know, when it comes to
heretic.
and you know, I think if we're going to bring this home, what we do is we just say, let's have the beta make combat more readable.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And so it can be, you know, figured out from the in the game. And if it does that, even, you know, bit by bit, that's heading in the right direction. So. Mm.
And I love that the mods are actually asking this question, because it shows they are thinking about it, you know, and they get a lot of grief over over stuff that they do, but, you know, that they're taking the time to do this and talk about this and investigate this, you know, good. Hopefully we get some, you know, proper criticism, not just people screaming at them and carrying on like they normally do. And, you know, we get things done. Mm-hmm. I don't mind you criticizing someone as long as it's constructive.
You know what I'd be interested to know? I'd be interested to know what kind of people are on the beta. Are they, you know, your hardcore PVM group, or are they the average player trying things out?
I've never been on it.
Right. And that's what worries me, is that if it's primarily the, you know, the PVM community and the hardcore PVMers giving feedback, then this question of average people kind of gets left by the wayside.
That's where I'd love to see them send out invitations to people and say, hey, if you just go in there, I mean, you don't even have to give them a roar, but if you get a special invite and a little survey thing to fill out at the end of it, I'd probably jump on and try it out, because they're asking for feedback off me in particular. If they're judging people, like, they go, okay, let's have a look. Parnassius doesn't do a lot of PVM, so we'll choose a group of people who do about the same as him, so we can get their feedback. Shane does a fair bit of PVM, but he's not up there in the upper tier. We'll grab a group of his lot. Then we'll get the hardcore PVMers, and then we'll get some of the skillers and that type of thing, and just try and get an overall feedback and send out those invitations, so they know that they're getting a variety from across the board.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like, you know, the way I see this ending is that I see necromancy being the starter combat style that people go to if they're wanting to learn the combat systems in the game and learn bossing.
Mm.
I see that happening. And then I see them moving off to either magic or range. Probably magic, based on how things are at, because magic is largely plug and play. Ranged requires a bit more work when you get to the ultra high end, when we start talking about the Bow of the Last Guardian. Of course, you know, you have 4-tick auto attacking with the fractured staff and whatnot, but we're kind of going to ignore that, because even if you, you know, just did tier 90 wands, you're doing enough for most things in the game.
I love range, but magic is my go-to, because it is the simplest one. And, you know, it's like when I started, it was like you get your levels up through melee, and then you go out to the other ones. And hopefully now necromancy is going to be that one that you sort of start off with and then branch out.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the biggest issue with melee is that you need, if you want to, you know, make it compete with the other ones, people don't know this off the bat, you need, you know, 4 or 5 switches to do that.
Yeah. Well.
So anyways, that's enough time on combat and the live stream for this week. Behind the scenes? ? Again? Yay. Again?
I mean, I'm not going to call it a trend yet, but I was happy to have it, because, I mean, is it just me, or is it nice to... It makes it feel like there's things happening. You know,
and that when, there's a path forward.
Yes. And like, and you can kind of see if there's going to be a slower spot, you kind of see there's a slower spot there, but you know that this is coming, so it's okay. And yeah, this is good. I'm not going to say that it's back, but I hope it's back.
November 13th, graphical improvements and community hit list focusing on the Edgeville and Varrock dungeons and sewers. Mm-hmm. November 20th, Vorkath, Battle of 4 and 3, new quest and boss. With this, there's a brand new trailer that they put out, and we learn with this that there's going to be a quest associated with this, which of course will require all of our previous quests, 60 necromancy, 50 construction, 10 slayer, as well as the tier 1 grove cabin and botanist's bench. And there's going to be a full blog and live stream preview on this one for next week. That's neat, I think. And, you know, the fact we're doing a full cinematic trailer now on this is also interesting, because typically they only put these out a bit before. But, you know, I can see they want to whet players' appetites a bit, just to, you know, let us know that, hey, this is on the way, this is going to be happening, and yeah, sit down and join us as we head into the holiday period. So, interesting graphic of Vorkath and Zamarigal flying in towards the fort, so that everybody thought Ungale was actually going to be the one that would be the place where we'd fight. But obviously we'll be diving deep into that next week. But interestingly enough, alongside that comes another event in the same vein as the Golden Cape Hunt, starting on the 20th. They're calling it the Guard and Lantern Shard event. And you'll collect 8 shards by completing a variety of tasks, launching with Vorkath. Ooh, I wonder how many hero points you're going to get for Vorkath in this event. Are you guys going to get to 120 in time?
Oh, I
am at level 228.
Yeah, we would have got there even without the buffs. Let's be real about that. Anyways, touchy subjects aside. with this, you will get new cosmetics for your necromancy weapons and some temporary buffs. Just like previous shard events, they'll cover a broad spectrum so that if you're not just focused on PVM, you'll be able to pick them up through a variety of non-bossing tasks. And they're already saying that if you don't compete in this event, the cosmetics will be added to Vorkath's drop table, and you'll be able to get them, but they'll be more rare.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, kind of reminds you of what they did with the War Priest stuff with the God Wars. Because originally, right, that was only through the World Events. And then the World Events,
Well, like I've been saying... We need necromancy cosmetics, and I was really shocked that Hero Pass didn't have any in there. So I guess this is going to be our first foray into doing that.
They were probably canned earlier.
I wonder if those extra non PVM buffs are going to be the buffs that they took out of Hero Pass too.
Oh, you don't be so funny.
I just wanted my quest one. That's all I wanted.
Yeah, we'll get more information on that next week. Maybe they will, and you'll be laughing all the way to the bank.
Well, I mean, they had them made, didn't they? So they've got to use them somewhere.
You know, actually, if you think about it, between those and then the buffs coming in December, it is all of the buffs.
Buffsember.
Christmas comes on November 27th with the Christmas Village 2023, a new quest, location, and activities. This is the Christmas Village is a brand new area in the Land of Snow with fresh Christmas activities, delivering a seasonal gameplay experience that people have been asking for, with all rewards, bar one special exception, directly earnable through gameplay. There's going to be a new quest, a seasonal quest called It's Snow Bother, as you help Santa and the Snow Imps raise Christmas spirit across the world by decorating key locations in Gielinor.
That's cool.
One of, one of those locations better be Violet's house.
There's a nice gingerbread house on the news post.
All I'm saying is there better be a Violet in the village or something.
We had 2021 or 2022, 2021 presents from the sledge. I don't know what 2020 was. I think it was just presents. And people have been saying ever since then that they wanted something more.
Yeah, this looks kind of neat. Like, I'm...
Yeah,
because...
I'm really excited. I mean, like, December looks good.
Right, because, you know, we're getting the presents regardless in the wrapping paper. That's coming back. And the people have always said there needs to be more than that, and I think that they heard that and they are now able to deliver on this.
Yeah.
So,
and as if that feedback wasn't enough and being incorporated, but wait, there's more.
The Black Party Hat. Every Sunday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. game time, you can turn in nice points to Santa at his lodge in the Christmas Village as a community. And each week, turning in at least one nice point guarantees that week's cosmetic reward from Santa, but having more points will give you more chance to earn something rather special. If you miss a week, you'll also be able to get cosmetics you missed from prior weeks if you have enough nice points, one per reward. Nice points can be handed in once per week, resetting with the opening of the lodge each Sunday. You'll also be able to hand in nice points at Santa's sleigh during any time in the week if you can't be there for the communal opening at lodge reset. Everything within the Christmas Village event is exclusively earned via gameplay. Except for the Black Party Hat.
Which we know Shad will get with his first nice point.
I forget who I was talking to. Somebody was asking me if I was going to buy an insold mask or a beret or orange Halloween.
One,
no, I didn't. I didn't.
Ah.
I said I'm saving my money because I want to see what the reward, the rare for this this year is going to be, and they're doing it. There's a party hat, a black party hat, and you'll have a chance to find it when handing in your nice points. The more nice points you have, the more chances you have. And we all know, of course, where this will also go. We can bet this will be on Treasure Hunter. And they say
it doesn't say that though.
But it always winds up to be like that.
Yeah.
I know, but it says like
I will
I don't
be
know,
shocked.
Man.
If
like,
they
it
don't,
does,
if
it
they don't put it on there,
that.
I'll be shocked and I will give them top kudo points. But I mean
I think it's crazy too, but they said it was nice points.
Was the
and there's
Black
no way
Santa,
to get more.
That was only through popping balloons, wasn't it? That wasn't actually on Treasure Hunt.
Yeah, well, Black Santa's but, were like just the crackers,
like,
yeah.
Here's the thing. It says in the news post, this is exclusively dropped through gameplay. There are no paid routes to finding it.
That's what I was... Yeah, well, that's why I said
go.
That's the feedback I was talking about. Like... If you can find something wrong with this, please let us know. Because I, to me, this is like everything people
only
asked for. My God.
And they say it's incredibly rare. Only a small number of players will end up with it during the course of the event.
Yeah. I mean, Shane will be one of them, of course. But we can take pictures, I guess, screenshots. Yeah.
Yeah. There are no paid routes at all. So yeah. So.
Yeah.
So what's going to be in Treasure Hunter for the wrapping paper event?
There's no mention of anything.
Black Santa outfit.
I'll be all right.
To match the Black Santa hat, because we got the Green Santa outfit last year.
I guess, and you'll note that there is no specific mention of what the Treasure Hunter promos will be running through this event, right? In addition to our brand new Christmas event, there's also a number of classical seasonal activities that will add to your experience this December. Our wrapping paper event will run alongside the Christmas Village event, which has you collecting lost wrapping paper by doing almost anything in RuneScape, turning in wrapping paper for festive presents that contain classic or brand new seasonal rewards not found in the Christmas Village event, and the Advent calendar makes a return, including a variety of Christmas-themed emotes to add to your collection, and there's also going to be seasonal buffs available to everyone over the course of December. Each week will include a new buff, with each buff stacking for a total of 4 buffs to enjoy by the end of December.
I love this, because it's like, okay, do you really have a problem with this, or did you have a problem with paying for this? Because we're gonna find out.
Buffs that were in Heroes. You had your support
buff. Let's make a list.
Your gathering buff, your artisans buff, and your combat buff. Then they had the content buffs, which were the Trailblazer, Fort Artisan, it's hard to read because I've blacked it all out, Headhunter, Chaos Horde, and Lumberjack's Ingenuity. So I reckon we'll see Trailblazer, Fort Artisan, Headhunter, and then the standard XP buffs. Yeah. I'm gonna piss myself laughing if they do that.
I think it'd be too insulting to the community to do that based on where we've been, honestly.
I'd love it, but I think it would be. But it's free.
That's it, you're not paying for it. You didn't want to pay for it. We've done it, so we're just gonna give it to you for free.
I feel
free
like I need
now.
To take in like size 108 font here, this passage about the Black Santa or Black Party Hat, and put it somewhere.
Yeah, screenshot it. Screenshot it for sure.
Because it's just too much of a sea change, isn't it? To go from Halloween having 3 tradable rares to having one here, not in Treasure Hunter.
But that's why I'm expecting we'll have a different one on Treasure Hunter, because if they say that, then they haven't,
right, because
said,
that's
haven't
a paper,
announced anything.
That's a paper reward, yeah. Then.
Yeah.
You can dye your new black party hat speckled pink. I don't know.
Add a turkey to it.
New neon dye.
All right. December 4th is another community hit list update. December 11th is the last update of the year, releasing even more community hit list updates into the game. And we're done. We're done the year.
I like this. I like having the month ahead.
After we're done here with the show, I'm going to go sit down and plan the rest of the year for update.
Yeah, I feel like we're gonna have stuff to do, which is nice. Like I feel like I'm going all out on Christmas RS.
Right,
year.
because what this also and this is a bit of a peek into my production window for the show, is that if we're gonna do something more elaborate for the show that's not just covering the updates of the week, I need to start planning that the week before. Mm-hmm. And by knowing what's coming each week, that helps a lot. So that means we're good for the 27th. We're good for the 20th. We might need to find something in addition to the graphical updates for next week. But we'll probably have the Vorkath live stream next week too, and the stuff on that. So we're good for next week as well. No, but I wonder if behind the scenes here we'll be back in the new year.
Hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I can't imagine that it has to be getting a warm reception, right? Like, I know it's good for us, but I'm sure it's got to be good for everybody.
That's right, because it gives you that, it's not too far in advance, so it's not like, 3 months in advance and then it doesn't come out and everyone cracks it. It's, we know this is coming out, so we're just letting you know what the month's releases are going to be. And I love that, because it's that anticipation. Oh, great, I've got this to look forward to. I can plan things, there's going to be the quest, so I can plan when that's coming out. Okay, I'm going to make sure that day's free, things like that. So I like that.
Yeah.
And you're getting a super rare rare that you can only get in game. I mean,
that to me, I mean, yeah, I mean, great. I'm never going to get it, so it's good that it's there, but I'm not.
None of us like. Well, Shane might. But
Shane will. Yeah. Shane will get two of them. Watch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
No. But maybe it's just as simple as seeing where the players are at and meeting them there, because you know. After the content update of Archaeology dried off, remember the first thing people asked for back? It was behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So, we'll have to wait and see if behind the scenes are back. But overall, I think it's a good thing as long as the dates can be met. So, though we're not dealing with anything too big here. The boss is big, but you know.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, that's it. That's pretty much it for the RuneScape content this week. We got some achievables this week. So starting off, Chaotic Eric got 120 Necromancy on the 8th. Arendelle 20 got 120 Woodcutting on the 7th. And Sio Aces got 120 Fletching on the 5th.
And moving on, Giovanni, who also got 120 Slayer on November 4th. Matt 258, 120 Prayer November 4th. Z with 120 Necromancy on November 4th, and wrapping it up is Oza Zoyo with 120 Constitution on November 2nd.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
Yeah, nice achievements.
What do you got for pick of the week, Tannis?
So I got a pick for all the Audible lovers out there. Audible is having a 2 books for 1 credit. Black Friday sale. So you can just go to Audible. Every credit that you have, you can get 2 of the books that are on sale. So you click on the, you know, the Black Friday sale section, because it is certain books, but it's a ton of books. A lot, like and I get, you know, a credit every month because of the membership thing. So I had a couple build up, and I saw a couple book series that I used to read back in the day, kind of action adventure mystery thriller type books, but I saw that there was a new-ish Jack Reacher book that had came out. I'm like, yep, I haven't read that one yet, so I'm gonna have to get it. And same thing, there was another Lucas Davenport series book. He was a detective, you know. So those are the two that I grabbed. But I mean, it's 2 for 1, so can't beat that.
And if you like your action adventures, check out Matthew Riley on there. He's got some books up there as well. He's very good.
Nice. Check that out. Yeah, I was just looking, and I don't know if I can see the 2 for 1 here in Canada, but I will definitely see if you guys have that on your end here in the US, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes at update.show. I know you're big on your audiobooks, Tannis, so probably good.
Yeah, I mean, you should, because I'm not like using a VPN that says I'm in Zimbabwe or anything. So it should be.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's here in Australia either, but they do have a 30-day free trial.
Okay. Nice. All right.
So, yeah.
And you can, like, a lot of people don't realize this, but you can loan each other books and
Audible?
Stuff like that. Audible, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I have to look it up, but I've had people loan me books in the past. So yeah.
Wow, that's neat. I had no idea that that could work. Mm-hmm. Good. What have we been up to on RS? Tannis, go first.
So I've actually been playing. I've been playing some OS, believe it or not, and I have to say, I never thought I would say this, but OS was the community I needed for the moment. and not
That's something.
it's something, because And it's not like, I'm not talking about like public chat or this or that, but I just needed some steady waters, some just smooth nostalgia driven gameplay. And that's what I've been getting. Now I'm looking forward to doing some double XP, you know, on RS3 tomorrow, you know, getting back to some wood cutting, but I needed the temperature to go dramatically down, and I found that of all places in old school. Well, wonders never cease.
Are you taking part in leagues next week?
I'm really, really thinking about it now. Because right now I'm just playing, you know, my regular account, but I keep thinking that leagues might, with all the buffs, it might feel more like Fresh Start did, and I'm really, really tempted. I'm really, really tempted.
Yeah, that starts on Wednesday, and, you know, we got lots going on for that on the old school side. On RS3 for me this week, I got 117 Necromancy, which brings me up to combat level 150. Nice round number there. In addition to all that, of course, you know, just doing the dailies, farming runs, potion flasks, and dinosaur farm. Roars are wonderful money. All those things bring in tons and tons of money if you're not doing them passively, be doing them. But the third episode of the old school show will be going out this Sunday. This will be our pre-leagues episode. We'll be talking about, you know, some of the regions that we're going for, what our plans are for it, and of course what we've been up to. An old school for the week, and it's an entirely different format than this show. So, I mean, if you want to hear me and if you want to hear Sirion talk about what we've been up to in old school and the old school updates of the week, check it out, update.show/OS. All of the episodes are there, and we've already, and, you know, we didn't have this until, you know, hundreds of episodes in on this one, but we're actually publishing already. We're publishing the old school show already on YouTube and Spotify and whatnot, which, you know, we didn't have for all those years. So update.show/OS, that's my advertisement and my what have I been doing this week. How about you, Parnassius?
Not a lot. I was babysitting three extra pugs, so I had five dogs here over the week, and one had an eye problem, so I had to be putting eye drops in every couple of hours. So basically just woodcutting, prepping for DXP. I want to get, I've got a few skills still sitting below 150 mil. So I'm trying to get all those, everything over 150 as I do my slow march towards 200 all.
Nice. Yeah. You're not getting bored of that yet?
No, because I go between skills. Like, I was doing woodcutting, now I'm doing a bit of construction. I'll jump on and do some runecrafting when I get, you know, when I just want a really heavy AFK. It's just, yeah, I just having fun, basically.
Fair enough. Well, I think that does us for this week. So we'll be here next week to discuss the Vorkath reveals and another community hint list. Live stream, since we actually know what's coming, which actually feels weird to say, and I like that, that's good. But if you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, best way to do that is to subscribe. We're on all the podcast listeners out there, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and of course YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb, or just update.show/subscribe. It's all there. And just click on your favorite podcast listener. That's the best way to get it. Leave a review, like the show, subscribe, all that fun business. But Tannis and I will be back next week, and Parnassius, thanks again for joining us. So then,
thank you once again for having me.
Of course. Until then, see you next week, everyone. Take care.
Happy skating, all.